Welcome back to the 2 a.m. Book Review Club, where we stay up late talking about books or talk about books that made us stay up late. This week, we are continuing both our Mystery Marathon March mini-series and also our Mystery Marathon March reading challenge. And the idea behind both is, in the name, we are reading as many mystery books as we can during the month of March. If you'd like to join this reading challenge, then feel free to check out the link in the description. Since the reading challenge is being hosted on the Storygraph, you will need either an existing Storygraph account or you will need to create a brand new Storygraph account in order to join. So please be aware of that if you're interested in joining my Mystery Marathon March reading challenge. I hope you'll consider joining, but either way, I hope you'll also decide to read a mystery book or two or three during Mystery Marathon March. I started off the first week of Mystery Marathon March strong with three mystery books. And in the second week of Mystery Marathon March, I again read three mystery books. I am so excited to talk about them because I have thoughts, many thoughts, about all three of these books. Let's begin with the first mystery book I read this week, which is The Writing Retreat by Julia Bartz. This is a mystery thriller that I've been excited to read, frankly, since it came out, because it is a book about, well, writers. I know that books about authors are controversial. A lot of people don't appreciate the meta aspect, or they think it feels lazy. And I know that these types of books are especially controversial with readers who are also writers. But as both a reader and a writer, I really enjoy these types of books personally, and I especially enjoy mysteries about authors. Two examples of mystery books about authors that I read and enjoyed last year were The Woman in the Library and also The Plot. And the latter, The Plot, was actually used as a comp title for this book, The Writing Retreat. After finishing it, I guess I can see why, but in my mind, The Plot and The Writing Retreat ended up being two very different books. The Writing Retreat is about a group of young, talented female writers who are invited to the spooky mansion of a famous horror author for a month-long writing retreat, where they will each write a novel and compete for the grand prize of $1 million and a publishing contract. Our protagonist is Alex, who is looking forward to this incredible opportunity, that is, until she learns that her one-time best friend, Ren, is also going to be attending this writing retreat. Alex and Ren had a huge falling out a year ago that ended violently, and now, trapped together in this mansion, tensions are rising between them. But as the retreat progresses, it quickly becomes clear that something isn't quite right, and Alex and Ren may have to work together to figure out what's really going on. Okay, so just from the blurb, the premise, the title, I thought I was really going to enjoy this book, The Writing Retreat, And unfortunately, I ended up with more mixed feelings than purely positive ones. So let's begin with the positive feelings, things that I think this book did well. The biggest positive of the writing retreat for me was the atmosphere. I loved the creepy old mansion. I loved the structured schedule of the writing retreat with the cocktail hours and the dinners and the parties. And I absolutely loved the sense of being inexplicably but inexorably drawn into this increasingly crazy world that has been constructed by Rosa, the famous author who is hosting this writing retreat. Also, I really enjoyed the discussions of writing and the various characters' opinions on stories and storytelling. And also, speaking of writing, I really liked the excerpts of Alex's novel that were included throughout the story. So, those are some things that I liked about the writing retreat. And now, let's talk about the things that I really didn't enjoy as much. I think my issues with this book largely come down to two main things. One, the pacing, and two, the characters. I put pacing first because I honestly think it's the biggest issue with this book. I think I've mentioned before that I read a lot of mysteries and thrillers that take place in isolated mansions, and generally speaking, these types of stories have a similar structure. Everyone arrives, gets settled in, tensions rise, someone gets murdered, and all of this generally happens within the first 100 pages or so because we're all waiting for that first murder to really kick things off. But in the writing retreat, nothing happens until 50 or 60% of the way through. And while I understand that the author probably wanted to have plenty of page space to set up the premise, draw the characters and the reader into the world of the story, and establish the dynamics between the various characters, while I understand all of this, I just don't think this pacing works for me. With a story like this, I'm primarily here for the mystery, the thrills, and I don't really want to wait until I'm over halfway through the book for something even remotely mysterious or thrilling to happen. I also didn't enjoy how once you do get past that halfway point, the pace picks up to the point where it's just frenetic. The bodies pile up, there are multiple chase sequences, reveal after reveal, and the plot just kind of lost me, I guess. But the thing is, the pacing could have worked if the characters had been interesting enough to drive over half of the book. Which brings me to issue number two, the characters, because at some point I realized that I didn't actually care about any of these people. It was pretty clear to me early on which characters were suspicious and which characters were probably red herrings. And so when you have literal chapters devoted to leading and misleading the reader about these various characters, to me, it's just like, can we get to the actual story at some point? Ultimately, the characters in the writing retreat are superficial and just not very interesting, either as individuals or as a group. And for a story written by a woman about women, the The messaging is disappointingly shallow. Women probably all secretly hate each other and or want to take each other down is kind of an overdone message and just not very interesting to talk about, especially over the length of an entire book. Not to mention, it really isn't reflective of real-world female friendships. And at the end of the book, I was kind of left wondering what the point was. For a story that felt like it wanted to talk about a lot of things, writing, publishing, female friendships, queer sexuality, The Writing Retreat didn't have anything interesting to say about any of these things. And that was kind of disappointing because I was so excited to read it because it had so much hype, and also because there were parts of this book that I genuinely enjoyed. And I do want to emphasize again that overall, I did enjoy The Writing Retreat. It just, afterward, when I was sitting down and thinking about it, I realized that was kind of an underwhelming experience. Enjoyable while you're reading it, but ultimately underwhelming. Mystery number two for me this week was The Violin Conspiracy by Brendan Slocum. This book is about a classical violinist named Ray McMillan, who has a solo career playing his family's heirloom Stradivarius violin, but he's worked really hard to get to where he is because Ray is African American. And if you know anything about the world of classical music, then you know that African Americans are severely underrepresented among classical music performers. The Violin Conspiracy begins with Ray's violin being stolen, and he sets off on a frantic quest to find out who stole his violin and why. I was a little unsure about this book, mostly because I haven't really seen anyone talking about it, and also because this premise could have gone in basically any direction. Locked room mystery, action adventure thriller, or even some kind of government level international spy story, given the word conspiracy in the title. But when I actually read the book, The Violin Conspiracy, I was blown away both by how unexpected it was and also by just how much I enjoyed it. Essentially, The Violin Conspiracy is a mystery, as promised, but it's also Ray's story. It's his coming-of-age story in an industry and a country that is often biased against him. He struggles throughout the book with basically everything: his family, his education, his career, his day-to-day life. And it's so emotionally devastating, but also emotionally rewarding to follow his character arc from the kid playing on his rented school violin to a full-fledged professional playing on the biggest stages in the world, but still having to deal with so much mistreatment. The author explains at the end of the book that a lot of the terrible things that happen to Ray are drawn from his own real-world experiences, and you can really feel that coming through the page. The pain, the anger, the hopelessness, because there's nothing that either the fictional character or the real person behind the fictional character can ultimately do about it. The Violin Conspiracy was definitely difficult to read at times, but I think it paid off in the end, not least because in almost every page, Ray's love for the music comes through so vividly and so beautifully. I loved the author's descriptions of the various pieces of classical music that are featured in this book, and I loved how he tapped into the way Ray was feeling as he played the music. The violin conspiracy is a mystery, but it's also so much more. And that's what makes it one of the most beautiful, lyrical, heartfelt books that I have read in a very long time. I will say that as far as the mystery goes, I had this suspicion in the back of my mind from the very beginning as to who stole the violin. And at some point, I realized that was the only person who could have realistically stolen it. But like I said, it didn't really matter because I was here for so much more than just the whodunit aspect, which doesn't happen often enough in the mystery genre. By the way, in case you're getting any bright ideas of stealing a Stradivarius violin and making a quick fortune, it's really not worth it, historically speaking. There have been a couple of instances, but it really hasn't ever paid off for anyone. And amusingly enough, there's actually a really good explanation as to why this is not a good idea in this book, The Violin Conspiracy, which again is about a Stradivarius getting stolen. Here's the excerpt. The surprising, or come to think of it, not surprising, thing about $10 million Stradivarius violins is that they're not that easy to sell. It's a distinctive instrument. Everybody knows what it looks like, and nobody wants to risk being the one caught holding it. Meanwhile, the original thief has it. He tries to ransom it, but if the ransom plan doesn't succeed, as thus far it hadn't succeeded with Ray's, since the insurance company refused to pay immediately, the thief could try to trade it on the black market, working with various fences to exchange the instrument for cash or drugs. Then some other lowlife will have it and again swaps it for drugs or guns or a few thousand dollars. Each new owner optimistically takes the chance to resell it, hoping to find an unscrupulous collector who will pay a couple million for it, stuff it in a vault, and never pull it out again. Unless, that is, the thief disappears with the violin. He might decide to hold on to it, use it as a get-out-of-jail-free card. If, in the future, he is picked up for another crime, he could trade the Strad's whereabouts as a bargaining chip for a lighter jail sentence. Like I said, stealing priceless instruments is not exactly a lucrative business, which is why, again, cases of famous instruments being stolen are actually kind of rare. One memorable case of a Stradivarius violin being stolen was when a violinist was performing on stage with his other priceless violin. He left his Stradivarius in the dressing room and the Stradivarius was stolen, but nobody discovered the violin's whereabouts until the thief finally confessed on his deathbed years later. He never sold it. He had just been holding on to it all that time. His widow collected the finder's fee, but the thief himself, again, never made any money off of this theft. And this story is the poster child for why this type of crime doesn't pay. I've linked an article that covers this crime in the description if you want to check it out, because I think it's a pretty interesting story. But again, if you're looking for a get-rich-quick scheme, stealing a Stradivarius is not going to be it. The third and final mystery book I read this week was another thriller, this time a domestic thriller called Just the Nicest Couple by Mary Kubica. I know this author has a ton of hype, and I've been excited to try out one of her books for a while now. So, when I saw this book was available from the library, I decided to pick it up. Just the Nicest Couple follows two couples, actually. A wealthy couple, Jake and Nina, and their less wealthy friends, Lily and Christian. One day, Jake goes missing. Lily confesses to Christian that it might be her fault, And Nina wants to find out what the heck happened to her husband. Like I said, I was excited to read this book, but how do I say this nicely? This is probably the most cliched domestic thriller I have ever read. I figured out every twist long before it happened, and probably because I knew exactly what was going on, this book felt so slow. I know it's a domestic thriller, but I honestly felt like I was waiting most of the book for something to happen that wasn't people going to work, people eating food, people talking to other people, etc., etc., etc. I also felt like there just weren't enough characters. There were only three main characters and two major side characters, and all of them were kind of ordinary, boring people, and overall, there just wasn't much in this book to hold my attention. I also get annoyed in thrillers when, after all of the twists have been revealed, there are things that just don't make sense, and there are things in this book that make no sense once you know everything. Maybe I just picked up the wrong book, but I don't really get the hype, and I don't think I'll be trying this author again. If you're looking for a domestic thriller, I would go with practically anything other than Just the Nicest Couple. Alright, so those are the three mystery books I read this week for Mystery Marathon March. The writing retreat was fun while I was reading it, but ultimately a bit underwhelming. The Violin Conspiracy was a standout, incredible book that made me feel all of the emotions, and Just the Nicest Couple is a book that I low-key regret reading because it was frankly boring. Again, if you would like to participate in Mystery Marathon March, the reading challenge link is in the description. But if you don't have a Storygraph account, you will need to create one in order to join the challenge. And that's going to be everything for this episode. This has been the 2AM Book Review Club. Thanks so much for joining me, and I will be back next week at 2AM. Until then, have a great week and happy book travels.